cool, irreverent, and entertaining talk station that delivers totally original content without any commercials. Log on to LATalkRadio.com and get involved with the best talk radio station on the internet. LA Talk Radio. We say what we want.
This station presents Real American Heroes.
Real American Heroes.
Today, we salute you, Mr. Supermarket Deli Worker.
Mr. Supermarket Deli Worker.
Some are content to stock shelves. Others, merely cashiers. But you, sir, operate the most dangerous machine known to man. The meat slicer.
There's a finger in my olive loaf.
When we ask for a pound of pastrami, Mr. Supermarket Deli Worker, you plop down a pound and a half and say, is a little over okay?
Only if I could pay you a little under.
And no one cuts the cheese quite like you.
That cheddar's really sharp, yeah.
So the next time you're holding number 67 and they're calling out number 23, wave your salami and salute to the man who's number one. Mr. Supermarket Deli Worker, a real American hero.
Mr. Supermarket Deli Worker.
Your hairnet just fell into the coleslaw.
Get ready for the best morning show on any kind of radio. Broadcasting live from the palatial studios of LA Talk Radio, get ready for Sam and Kara in the morning. Give Sam and Kara a call at 323-203-0815. And now, here are your hosts, Sam and Kara.
Good morning and welcome to Friday, September 17th. We've got another great show for you. We're going to talk about a lot of different things, including English grammar. For those of you who are into language, I know I am. Are you into language?
Well, I mean, when you say language versus grammar, I think of grammar like...
like in school.
T's being dotted and I's crossed.
And all kinds of things like that, which to me means a lot, but, you know, then again.
Yeah, like grammar.
To me, grammar is, like, really important. I don't know why, but because I love language, you know.
So do you judge people if they send you a quick email and, like, they don't capitalize the right thing or comma?
No, because on email and stuff, and we're going to talk to them about it, there's, the rules have changed, you know, when people post online, I think.
Yeah,
and you're not
I've gotten to... so lazy. I mean, I never was on top of it, but I've gotten to where I'll know that this is completely just. I mean, everything's just choppy and to the point.
Yeah, you see, I think I'm the only one who writes like postings, like tweets and Facebook, with capital letters and correct punctuation and everything.
You're the only one, Sam.
I'm the only one, man. Everybody else writes way they talk. And I should actually learn to subscribe to that as well, you know. It's not required to write like an author when you post tweets and stuff, you know.
Well. Flowing poetry and good grammar. That was hard to say. On your tweets. Keep it up.
On your tweets, yeah. So how you doing? You're looking beautiful this
morning.
Thank
you. I have a good coffee today.
Oh, is that what it is?
It's normally just coffee, and I put a little sugar in it, or a lot of sugar.
Right.
But today I got toffee nut syrup in it.
Ah, is that good?
It's making a difference.
Really?
It's buttery.
Oh, really?
It tastes buttery. Like.
Does it make it sweet as well?
Yeah, it's sweet. It sweetens your coffee, so you don't have to add sugar.
Yeah.
I did anyway. But it's, you know, just to keep make, you know, it has a backup plan in case it didn't work out. But it does. It feels like somebody took like maybe a scoop of butter and put it in there.
Oh, wow. Yeah. That's interesting.
Yeah.
So does it taste good? I mean, is the texture good anymore?
Oh, man, it's good.
Yeah.
It's good coffee. It just, you know, when you get a good cup of coffee, and you're like, this is a good cup of coffee.
Yeah.
It's that feeling.
So you're drinking Starbucks, and which is cool. I haven't been to Starbucks in who knows how long.
Really? You never go get coffee?
I used to, but not anymore. I don't know.
Oh, really?
Maybe because they don't let you smoke outside anymore. I figured, what the hell, you know, it's not worth it.
No,
yeah. Because when you drink coffee, you have to have a cigarette when you're a smoker. Yeah. Definitely. It's like a ritual.
Same thing with people with wine or something.
Yeah, exactly. People that drink alcohol, yeah.
Do you take a bath and drink and smoke a cigarette afterwards?
No.
You don't take baths.
I don't even take baths, no.
I know you're dirty.
No, but I'm not that like desperate, you know. I mean, it's not the first thing I do.
How many do you smoke a day?
I smoke about a pack.
How many cigarettes is that?
20 cigarettes.
Sam, that's are you kidding me? 20 cigarettes?
Isn't that amazing how the body can handle it? I just don't know. Yeah, I don't know how much longer it's going to handle it.
Can't handle it, Sam.
I need to do something about it.
How about a Nicorette gum and the patch?
Yeah, but first you have to want to quit, you know? And that's the problem. Yeah. I love it too much.
What about downsizing the amount?
I could try that.
What if you just even did like 10 cigarettes?
Yeah. But then you start having to count and everything. And
yeah,
it's just
so
like,
much work.
Yeah.
Having
you
got to
either quit it or, you know, or smoke.
Yeah, yeah, like, okay, so tell me how it works. You wake up in the morning, first thing you do, have a cigarette?
No. I take a shower, I make coffee and stuff, you know, and then I get working, and then I do.
Then you have a cigarette, like, when your coffee...
Right.
Okay.
Exactly.
And then by the time you get to here, the studio, how many cigarettes have you had?
2.
Really?
Yeah. But then it starts after
the
show.
Then it's like, let's get it going. A pack a day, huh?
Yeah.
How much?
And you see, I also don't eat until late in the day, so that's what keeps me going.
They say cigarettes are appetite suppressants.
Yeah, they are.
Yeah. Listen, I was making jokes about, you know, it's time to leave L.A., and I fill in the blank, and one of them was like, you know, it's time to leave L.A. when you can understand why being a coke whore would be a good diet plan.
Mm-hmm. What's a coke whore?
Coke and doing cocaine.
Oh, coke.
Yeah, doing a coke.
Okay.
Anyway, it's you start to go, you know what, because a lot of these girls in Hollywood that are really skinny, I mean, some of them are natural or they work at it, but most of them, they're notorious for, you know, it's a lot of it's medication or cocaine or diet, coke,
right,
and cigarettes.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you got to understand, it makes sense.
Yeah,
I'm not saying be a drug addict. I'm not advocating that at all. I'm just saying you see how thin. I mean, we're not just talking in shape thin. We're talking like rail thin. And these girls aren't eating. They're doing cocaine. Mm-hmm. They're smoking cigarettes and they're drinking Diet Coke.
Wow.
Now, some of them get prescription drugs like Adderall,
mm-hmm,
which is for ADD. And
But if you don't have ADD, it's speed. It becomes speed for you.
Basically, I don't know how it works, but it basically it helps people drop weight.
Mm-hmm.
Adderall does.
Yeah, well, all speed is sort of like an appetite suppressant.
How does speed help somebody with ADD? They don't need speed.
Well, that's the thing, is that when it just seems to work. You know, if you have ADD, then you don't get speedy and stuff. You know, you just, I guess you feel normal. But when you don't have it, then it's speed, you know, and it's, it can work like that. I mean, most diet pills are like that too, you know, the way they suppress appetite. Is because they're speed. That's what they are.
That's crazy.
Did you ever try diet pills?
I think a long time ago, like when
I was
right. Yeah,
they make you like hyper and stuff.
I bought this one kind. It's at GNC. It's called Redline,
mm-hmm,
and it's a certain type of pill that you take it right before you take it 30 minutes before you work out, and it's to help burn extra calories and fat and all that stuff.
Uh-huh.
And I only took it like 3 times. It scared the crap out of me.
Really?
I was like, I don't care. I mean, you think you want to be thin, but I don't think I'm ever going to do thin the wrong way. You know what I mean? I don't have that kind. It's too scary to me.
Yeah,
I took these pills, and it wasn't like an appetite suppressant. It was to basically boost up your workout, right?
Right.
So anyway, it turns your body into a fake hypothermia,
mm-hmm,
and so the fat and everything kind of goes to certain parts of your body to where you're burning. So like if you take it 30 minutes before you work out and then you work out, it's supposed to burn more fat because it's near organs or something like that. I don't remember,
mm-hmm,
but I just remember after I worked out, I was cold and sweaty and my heart was beating, and that happened to me all three times I took it.
Really?
And I was like, and I just did not feel good. I felt like a freaking drug person.
Yeah.
I was like, I don't feel good.
You can't take shortcuts in life.
No,
it always bites you in the ass.
Yeah. And I was like, this sucks. You know, it's legal. It's something that a lot of people that are in fitness world take or whatever.
Right.
But I was like, this shit isn't going to work for me. No. Uh-uh.
Yeah. No, the bottom line is less food intake, more exercise.
Pretty much.
That's
it's really basic,
weight.
Actually. Just take care of your
it
body.
It really is. You know, that's
There's
why
really
we get
no,
fat is because we don't do anything.
It's just take care of your body.
Yeah.
You know, it's all about balance.
Yeah.
But
you see, I don't do a lot of activity, but I don't eat a lot either, you know, so.
But you still need to do more activity.
I do need to do that.
And it's not even just for, like, weight loss. It's
mm-hmm.
For
health.
Yeah, you know, get your heart going.
Cardio.
Blood pumping, get the liver, everything. You emit toxins, you know that?
Yeah. I know. I keep talking about it, but eventually I'm gonna do it. I don't have.
It's usually how it works. We talk, and eventually they're like, okay, here we go.
Yeah.
But yeah, even when you sweat, your body. So all the free radicals in the environment, all the toxins and stuff, your body absorbs. But when you work out, you actually sweat out a lot of those toxins. Mm. And so it's really good just for biological kind of cleansing. Right. And then you need to take a shower because all that's on your skin, like that salty residue when you sweat.
Yeah.
It's all in there, like all the Advil you take or whatever it is you take, you know.
But it comes out in your sweat?
Yeah, in your sweat. So it's also just cleansing your body.
I see.
So it's so good. Like a friend of mine, she's lost a lot of weight. Mm. And I'm like, hey, you know, I was trying to get her to go hiking with me and start running and stuff. And she's like, I don't see the point. Why are you losing a lot of weight? And she's lost a lot of weight. Mm-hmm. But I'm like, it's not really just about losing weight. I mean, it's so, you got to be healthy.
Yeah.
Anyway.
That's true.
But that was one of my jokes about, you know, needing to leave LA because you can understand how.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, I got ADD. I got some ADD going on here. I have a hard time focusing. I'm an artist. How about we get some of that Adderall?
So did you offer your friends any of the boy butter that we got yesterday?
I forgot. Just, you know.
I got to try it, you know. I mean, I don't know what for.
I think a lube is weird to me. I know some people need it. I there's no judgment. It kind of weirds me out. It just does not seem sexy at all.
Yeah. Fortunately for me, in my experience, in my life, I never really had to use that. So that's pretty cool, you know?
Yeah.
I think if you get a woman turned on enough, you don't need it. But except, you know, when you get into anal and things like that, you know?
Yeah.
Which gays do a lot.
Yeah, and I mean, he made a good point, but I mean, I just, it just seems so unsexy, you know?
Yeah. But maybe to us, you know, but I think for people that use it, it's just fine. I don't think it's unsexy.
Yeah, I'm not making it wrong. I'm just saying, you know.
Yeah, I'm just saying.
But, you know, I couldn't, I don't know how that would, I don't know why. visual.
So we were speculating about the American Idol judges, and I guess on Wednesday they're going to announce it, and they're saying that it probably will be Jennifer Lopez and Steven Tyler from Aerosmith.
I would tune in to see how it goes.
I know.
Would you?
Yes. Not for J-Lo, but for Steven Tyler.
Yeah.
I would. I think he's an interesting person.
He's interesting, and he's a serious musician.
Yeah.
I think Jennifer Lopez, she's a performer.
Yeah.
Which is good. She's like a Paula Abdul. Like, Paula Abdul could not sing to save her life. She can. I think she knows that about herself. But she...
Why? She used to... She had a few songs.
Oh, no. She had some hit songs.
Right.
She was huge in the 80s.
Right.
But no, it's that she wasn't a vocalist. I mean, she was a pop singer that basically sang. You know what I'm talking about? Like, what's her song? Lost, and I dream, I don't know which way to go. But she's not really singing in that, you know? Mm. I don't know which way to go. I mean, it's pretty much, I can almost speak it as close to sing it.
Mm.
You know what I mean? So she's a performer. She can
right,
dance. She
yeah,
dances
well,
like crazy. She's beautiful. And she sold the song. Mm. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But as a singer, you know, I don't want to hear
something. You're
somebody.
Not so sure.
Well, no, I'm not. It's not that I'm not so sure. I'm completely... sure about it. She's not a singer.
Okay.
But you know what I mean? The difference?
Yeah, I don't know. I haven't seen that because I heard... I mean, she had a few songs.
No,
and
no,
I
you're not getting
videos.
It. She had tons of hits. You're
right.
Absolutely right.
You're saying she doesn't really sing it. That's what you're saying.
She's not I would never call her like a vocalist.
Mm.
And so if you have somebody that's talking about the voice and they don't have the voice...
Right.
You kind of... In my opinion, it kind of can... discredit what they're saying. But if she wants to talk about like the performance or the visual or the selling of the song, that kind of stuff, then I'll listen because I'm like, she knows her stuff. She's a choreographer. She's had hit songs in the 80s, and I'm talking about Paula Abdul still, you know. So there's that side of her that you would listen to her, you know, as far as that selling aspect.
Mm-hmm.
But as far as vocally, I don't want to hear her say the timbre of your voice. I'm like, you don't even know what the word timbre means. You know what I mean? Or the tone. You don't even know what the word tone. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I don't want to hear somebody say that.
Okay.
Anyway.
So you're not crazy.
But Steven Tyler, yes, absolutely. J-Lo, again, same thing with Paula. It's like she sticks to the visual. She sticks to the selling of it. I'll listen.
Right.
Yeah.
Cool. Okay. Well, let's call our guest. Take a little break here and call our guest. We're going to be calling Roy Peter Clark, and he wrote the book called The Glamour of Grammar. A Guide to the Magic and Mystery of Practical English. And I picked this book because, like I said, I am into grammar. I like language. I like speech. We've had people that wrote language books before. And in fact, I just finished one before this one. And so believe it or not. Roy Clark. Maybe he's still busy with another interview.
Sorry.
Roy Clark.
Okay. Maybe.
That's fine. I love how our interviews go here when we're calling authors. We're like, hey, we wanted to talk to you about your new gardening book. You're not there. Okay.
But usually when they do like a book tour and promotion and stuff, you know, they do them back to back and stuff. So he might still be busy with his other one. Let's try it again and see. And if it doesn't answer, we'll try in a few minutes again and see what happens. You know, I'm sure they're not, you know, they're not dissing us, if that's what you
Roy think. Clark.
Yes, Roy. Oh, great. We got you because we got your voicemail before. Good morning to you. This is Sam and Kara in L.A. How
good
are you doing this morning?
Yeah, how are you doing, Sam and Kara? I heard you ring through, but I was on... I was talking to WBZ in Boston.
Yeah,
so,
that's what I was telling Kara.
I'm delighted to be with you.
Wonderful, wonderful. Well, where are we calling you? What part of the country are you in?
I'm in St. Petersburg, Florida.
Oh, I see.
Where it's sunny and hot,
yes.
And where when we see all those hurricanes lined up in the Atlantic, we pray, let it be Bermuda.
Yeah.
And apparently it's working.
That's real thoughtful of you.
Yeah, so none of them have hit you yet, huh? You haven't gotten
it. Not this year.
Right.
So we feel we did our penance in like 2004, 2005 when there was one after the other. So
There you go. Well, Roy, you wrote the book called The Glamour of Grammar, and I started reading this, and I was telling Kara before that I'm a big fan of language and grammar and things like that. So this was a good book, I think, to check out. And I've been enjoying it so far. So we wanted to talk to you. Yeah, we wanted to talk to you a little bit about it. And first of all, obviously, the title. How can grammar be glamorous? How did you come up with the title?
When I was in graduate school, studying English language and literature, a teacher said, "Go to the Oxford English Dictionary and learn the relationship between the word glamour and grammar."
Right.
And I said, well, I know the relationship. They both begin with the letter G. They kind of rhyme.
Right.
Two syllables. And when I got to the dictionary, I was astonished to find that the earliest version of the word glamour was really a slight corruption of the word grammar.
Right.
And the way it happens is that grammar, centuries ago,
uh-huh,
meant much more than it means now. It meant all kinds of language learning, including magical things like magic and other things that we think of now as sort of superstition.
Right.
And so a glamour was, in fact, in the vampire stories and movies and things, you still hear people talking about glamour meaning a magical incantation, just the way the word spell,
right,
means both lining up the letters,
uh-huh,
and also speaking in a magical way. And so I grabbed onto that notion, not necessarily as just a historical curiosity, but as a metaphor for how we need to frame discussions of language in education and in the workplace and in journalism and the media to restore some of the magic and mystery and fun and energy and glamour that was once associated with the word grammar, but which has now been lost.
I see. Well, you know what I've noticed is many people, including myself, get very emotional about language and making sure that everything's written correctly and so forth. One thing that really irks me is the misuse of the comma. But the apostrophe. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Well, do you mean...
like people misuse it,
informing the possessive.
Right. But then people, you know, when they write in plural, they put apostrophes there. Nine times out of ten, they don't even need to put one in there, and it just absolutely makes me crazy because it changes the meaning.
Absolutely. Yes, I think that the things we have to pay that not all language crotchets, if I may use that word, which I use in the book, are equal. In other words, when some there are some people who insist that you can't end a sentence with a preposition, that you can't split an infinitive, and I just have hundreds of years of great literary writing to contradict those kinds of things. But when a word is used improperly so that it affects the meaning, so that it affects the experience that a person who's receiving the message have, that's a sin, if you will. That's something that requires attention. I tell a story in the book about an experience I had in childhood where I was standing at the window, front window of my house in New York, and this very, very cute little teenage girl was walking down the street, and I was sort of looking at her in a special way, and her nickname in the community was Angel Face, and she had that written on the back of her, her jacket,
right.
And my mother snuck up behind me and said, "There goes old Angle Face." I said, "You mean Angel Face?" And she says, "No, Sonny boy, take a look. That little juvenile delinquent misspelled her nickname on the back of her jacket."
Wow.
I could never look at her the same way again.
Nor should you, because she's a teenager. And how old were you at the time?
I was 9.
Oh, are you lying or are you telling the truth?
No, I was 9.
Oh, I thought you were saying this as you were an adult male. I was getting really creeped out. I was like, where is this going? Anyway, back to the interview.
So, yes, I mean, it means, yeah, the age of something, the number of the age means something, but so that's, this is where spelling, you know, really counts.
Right, yeah. Now, I know a lot of people, we were talking, Kira and I, a little bit earlier about language in social media now, because obviously a lot of people are writing a lot of things, and probably 9 times out of 10, they're not really significant. But so we sort of like developed a new style of writing, I think, in those, you know, in Facebook and Twitter and so forth. And, you know, where there's no rules of grammar, it seems, anymore. And to me, it's hard to read these things, but it seems to be happening. That seems to be the logical progression of our language.
Well, language is always changing. There are new, the novel didn't always exist. And so technology and demography and immigration, the way that different words come into the language, the people who you know, who come into the country, all of these things are going to create a constant sort of flow of change. And here's my take on where we are. I think one of the greatest values that a person who wants to use the language well, one of the greatest values is versatility. And that is that there are times, there are occasions where we have a responsibility to use language in the most formal ways, in the most, you know, to adhere to the accepted principles of standard English. So there are times when we have to wear our tuxedo. But listen, there are also plenty of times where we can wear our Hawaiian shirt. And sometimes our language should be formal and adhere to what we think of as the conventions of correctness. And there are some times when you can just relax. And I think we're seeing that on the internet. One person's 140 character Twitter message is another person's new and interesting genre. And there are people who have the reputation for being incredibly good writers on these various forms. And what they're doing, if you look at what they're doing, they're using the same principles of strategies of writing that all successful writers have used for centuries.
Right. Well, it makes sense, you know. Now, what I'm curious about is, how did you get into language and grammar? I mean, what was the appeal for you?
You know, that's I keep wondering wondering about that. I think it has to do with growing up on the Lower East Side of New York in a family of immigrants. I was the first person. I had Jewish relatives. I had Italian relatives. I was the first person in my family to graduate from college. Mm-hmm. And among other characteristics of their culture, the Jews and the Italians are great talkers.
Yes.
And they can talk at my relatives could talk at every level of language, uh-huh, down to my grandmother could use profanity in three or four different languages, and but my grandfather could also talk to me about Michelangelo as if they had just, you know, they were hanging out together.
Right.
So I think I was always I was always connected to a world of practical language. The other thing that I remember so powerfully growing up in the 1950s, going to parochial schools, is that on one half of my experience, one side of my experience, I was learning grammar and language in the most direct, mechanical, and formulaic ways, so that I would learn the parts of speech and subject verb agreement and all of the things that we now think of as correct usage. And then and I was always taught the dangers, right, of how you would be perceived if you didn't use the language well. And on the other hand, I'm back, I'm 9 years old now, I'm not an adult yet, and I'm watching and listening to Elvis Presley and to Little Richard and to Chuck Berry, and I'm listening to, especially since I play the piano, to Jerry Lee Lewis, and I hear, I look at what his songs, and it's whole lotta shaking going on. And I said, wow, if I have to make a choice here, uh-huh, between which language is most powerful, I'm actually voting for old Jerry Lee. So I think what I've grown up with in that sort of with that background is an appreciation of language in all its many uses, in all, for all its various audiences.
Right. So there's different, there's more formal, and then there's more like, there's obviously a difference between written language and spoken language, and but the dictionaries,
correct,
seem to handle all the new words and stuff, which is, I think, very interesting because they're keeping up with the progress of mm-hmm, how language is developing. Well, the book is The Glamour of Grammar, and we're talking to Roy Peter Clark. Everybody go get the book. I know it's on Amazon and probably in all other bookstores. One final question I wanted to ask you. How do you see printed books going away with Kindle and everything? Or do you think we still have a few good years with printed books?
I think printed books will not go away. Mm-hmm. I know very well about these new forms of delivery, but as part of writing both my last book, Writing Tools, and this one, The Glamour of Grammar, I've been invited to all of these amazing events. These are book festivals around the country. There's one in Tucson that I've attended now. It'll be for the third year in a row, and they attract 50,000 people who come out of their houses, who step away from their computers to celebrate reading and to celebrate being in the presence of authors and the sharing the wonderful experience of print on paper. And I think we should embrace anything that helps citizens, helps young people, helps children read more often, write more often, and have an opportunity to speak and to think about the written word.
Right. Amen. All right. Again, the book is The Glamour of Grammar, and Roy Peter Clark. Roy, thank you so much for taking the time. I definitely highly recommend the book. It's got every possible angle on language that you might imagine, origin of words and so forth. So, Roy, thanks again for your time. We really appreciate it, and all the best with the book.
Thank you so much. Thanks for your hospitality, and thanks for your own commitment to the language.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Roy. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
All right. Well, Kira didn't have a lot to say about it, but then again, you never know what book we're going to do, so you don't have time to prepare. So I'm guilty as charged.
I just don't, you know, I don't have a lot of opinions on grammar. Mm. I mean, maybe that's my own, you know, whatever,
yeah.
White trash.
Do you
out.
Read? Do you like to read?
I don't know how to read.
No?
Mm-mm. No, I do read. I don't read frequently as far as, like, I'm not a novel reader. I usually read nonfiction.
Right.
And it takes me a while to read a book because
yeah.
I lose interest.
Do you really?
I usually read about 75% of the book and I stop. Like,
really?
I was reading these
wow.
two books and I read about enough to get the gist of the book and then I'm bored. And I think
right.
that's... You know, I mean,
it's normal, though. You know?
Yeah,
and
I mean,
it
so,
happen.
But I mean, the things I'm usually passionate about are more like really inspirational books
right.
that are usually people's memoirs or their likes, you know,
yeah.
spiritual books, things
right.
like that. One of my favorite books I've read is called Blue Like Jazz.
Mm-hmm.
It's a fabulous book. It's really, really great. It's mm-hmm. by the author Donald Miller,
mm-hmm.
and he's just amazing. And you know, I've read a lot of books, but you know, I'm not a frequent reader.
Yeah.
Unless Us Weekly counts, which I don't think it does.
Right? Well, it's reading. What the hell? You
I mean,
know?
I'm online. I have to read to be online.
Yeah, I suppose.
But you're a reader. Like, that's your entertainment
I'm an
source.
Avid reader.
Yeah,
yeah.
like...
Yeah. Too much. Too much.
Really?
Yeah, too much.
What do you mean?
I read too much. I mean, now that I have some free time, you know, that's how I feel it. But... It's I need to be more active, like we said, you know.
You need to get
more
shallow,
active.
Sam.
Yeah.
Put down all those words, okay, and go drink a beer somewhere. No, I'm just playing.
Yeah.
I mean, I think it's great. I think that it's yeah, I
mean, it's a great source of information and entertainment for me. You know, I mean, I read both fiction and nonfiction.
I think you're a learner, too. I think you really like to grow.
Maybe,
absorb.
Yeah. I like to absorb yeah. things. Every time I discover something new, I, like, read anything I can find about it.
Oh, really?
You know? Yeah.
Now, how was that book that you're reading called Click, the chemistry
oh,
book?
I'm done with that a long time
I
ago.
I know. That was
yeah.
like, wait, what did you
that
think
was,
of it?
That one I sort of dropped midway, you know?
Okay.
It was too scientific for me, you know?
Really?
On how people click together and stuff, yeah.
Oh.
It's like, you know, the first few pages are cool, and then they get into all these experiments.
Did you read the passage?
I read only part of it until the vampires showed up, and then I got bored with it.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
We had them on the show, and you're like, I'm going to read your book.
Well, I did, you know, but it's not really my genre, you know.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. But the beginning was good. It was really good, you know.
Yeah, I mean,
now I'm starting to read a book on Motley Crue.
Oh, really?
I want to know all of their adventures and shit. That would be very interesting. Sex, drugs, rock and roll.
That's your style.
That's my
style.
That
and your Jackie Collins.
Yeah.
You're
but I'm done with Jackie Collins, you know.
Really?
Yeah. So, I mean, I usually read like four books at a time, you know. So
oh,
I've
okay.
got about four. I've got a business book. I've got fiction. I even have a graphic novel of Indiana Jones, believe it or not. Just sort of like for a break.
Uh-huh. That's funny, Sam.
I know.
You're probably really smart then. You're getting all that information.
I must be.
You must be really intelligent.
Only now you're discovering that? You must be.
Well,
if you don't know it by now, then you'll never know.
If you don't know me by now, if you don't know me. I like emotional stuff.
Do you?
Spiritual stuff.
Uh-huh.
And I like creative stuff.
Cool.
There's a little... I can branch out into other categories, but that's the kind of stuff I like to read on.
I see.
Yeah.
Okay.
Do you remember... Do you know Janice Dickinson?
Yes, she was here on the in the station.
Oh, when?
Actually, a few weeks ago. Go ahead. She was like, she's considered herself like the first supermodel or something.
Yeah, she's self-proclaimed.
Yeah.
Well, who was she on Tony Sweet's show?
No, she was on The Alternative on Terry LeGrand's show. Remember Terry?
Oh,
was
Terry.
Here the
yeah.
Other day.
Okay.
Yeah.
No, she's crazy. She's funny.
Why?
She's
What's she doing?
Well, I mean, she's just funny. She's really, really funny. And she is crazy, but whatever. I mean, you could just see her on TV. That's exactly how she is in real life.
Yeah.
But I used to work at a Starbucks, and she would come in all the time.
Right.
And so she was just kind of like a nut job. But, you know, cool lady. Yeah. No, I'm not saying that mean-spirited, but she is. She's crazy. I think she'd say she's crazy. But she wrote a book, a couple books, and one was called No Lifeguard on Duty.
Uh-huh.
And I was wondering if you've read any of her books, because they're all about her world in that fashion industry and being back. She, like, dated Mick Jagger and all these different, yeah. you know. And then she wrote another book called Everything About Me is Fake and I'm Perfect.
Yeah.
I'm just
so are those biographies? Is that what it
yeah,
is?
Yeah, they're all kind of like her life, you know. But I remember when she just got like a new facelift or something and new cheeks and new lips and she came in and it looked rough. It looked
really?
Like it hurt. I mean, she looks good now. I guess it paid off, but.
Yeah, as you get older, I don't know. I don't know about these surgeries, you know.
Well, I think for some women, it's if they get it done right, it can look good. And for some women, it you know, she says it bought her 15 years. And, I mean, I can see that. She doesn't look bad at all.
Really?
It's just kind of, in my opinion, it looks a little bit, I think when women are trying to, it's like your whole body doesn't look that way. So it's kind of like weird.
It
you know?
Is.
I've heard
it
a man say it like this. This guy I know, he would say that. The wrinkles are going in the wrong direction because you've pulled them upward, but they're still wrinkles.
Mm.
Your face is going in a different direction than the rest of your body, and it just looks like it doesn't fit. It's like you're trying to pull one over on people, but they're not buying it.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, we're not buying that you're 15.
Yeah, and you can tell when there's a you know, when they did some kind of an operation, you know? I mean, it's like, it doesn't look natural.
I mean, I think little stuff here and there is fine, you know, little Botox if it's, you know, whatever. I've heard a dermatologist say it's fine, but... You know, a little Botox, a little bit of whatever that looks like, injectables, which they just fill in some of the...
See, those are shortcuts again, though, and I think it comes back to haunt you.
I think if you do it conservatively and just a little bit, I think it could be fine. But, I mean, going under the knife, unless it's really, really necessary. I've been watching a lot of... Well, not recently, but I've watched those E! Shows that talk about plastic surgery gone wrong and all these stars saying how they should never have done it.
Yeah.
And I just think that, you know, if it's done right, it can be wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
But the risk factor is so high for it to not look good or to have medical complications.
Yeah.
And to think that you get kind of an infection or you can die or you can have a botched up job all for, like, something elective.
Right.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
I just think that, I mean, we're talking about some stars like Kathy Griffin. She went to...
She had some work done?
Yeah, she's openly admitted her plastic surgery. And she's even said, I went back and I went to a different doctor that was... And then she said, I went to the rich Beverly Hills doctors that were referred. And she's, you know...
Right.
She had some bad work done.
Really?
And she said, I would never recommend it. It's stupid. It's not worth it. And I thought, you know, that's really true.
Yeah. But people go pretty far, you know. I mean, have you heard of, like, vaginal...
Oh, my gosh.
What they call it?
It's called a V-job.
vaginal
rejuvenation.
Rejuvenation,
thank you. I don't want to know how they go in there and cut out half your vagina.
Yeah, but, I mean, that's a little extreme, wouldn't you say?
I just think women are... I think women are... And I'm not saying I'm not guilty of this at times, but I think culturally women are obsessed with the wrong things.
Mm.
If I'm this enough, if I'm that enough, if I'm this enough. And it's like nobody's really working on their character or their heart or their spirit or their personality.
Right.
You know, it's like, I just got to get this lifted and this tighter and this more tighter.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of like the thin thing. One thing a friend of mine we're kind of thinking about, we have a few friends, obviously everybody's in here doing acting. Some beautiful women that are just talented, you know, or really, really beautiful women that go out for certain roles and they keep not getting the role.
Mm-hmm.
And so their agents just like lose more weight, lose more weight, lose more weight. And they really don't have any weight to lose.
Yeah.
I mean, they look amazing.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of think it's just the trend. When you don't know what else to do, it's like you get skinnier.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't know what else to do, you fix your appearance. And sometimes maybe you just aren't talented enough for that. Or maybe somebody else was better. Or maybe it's not the right fit for you. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But I think women tend to just go to the physical. Like, I just need to be, you know, I need a tighter vagina. My vagina's just not tighter. You know?
Yeah, I mean, what's that about? You know?
I don't know.
Why would anybody be concerned, like, to the point where they're going to have surgery there?
I mean, and really, what is it? I mean, I think this whole, like, women, like, oh, some women have big vagina, big vaginas or whatever. I don't know. I don't go around expecting, but... You know, I have a friend that he worked in the porn industry, and mm-hmm. he was an accountant. He wasn't in the front of the scenes, but, you know, he dated women in porn. He was going, you know, you're in the industry, you're kind of around it all, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he wrote a book about all the different myths about pornography.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things he wrote was, you know, women down there in that mm-hmm. area, no, they aren't any bigger.
Mm.
You would think they would be, but they're not.
Yeah.
He's like, they're
you
just...
You mean like porn stars? Because
yeah.
they do it a lot.
Yeah, he's like, it's normal.
No, yeah, that's bullshit, I think.
What, you think it's not normal?
No, I don't think they get, like, stretched out or something from having sex, you know?
Yeah, I think that it's a myth, you know? And the same thing with, like, you know, women having babies, and then they're like, oh, this. I have a friend...
Well, that can cause... loosening there.
Well, I mean, a friend of mine, you know, I was there, I saw the whole thing, and I saw what her vagina looked like afterward.
Right.
It was a blowout.
Right.
It was a blowout. Mm-hmm. I was like, I cannot believe this is a vagina right now.
Right.
Doc went in there, yanked it up a bit, sewed it up. She didn't even want to look at that area for like a month or two. Like when she went to the bathroom, she wouldn't even look down there.
Yeah.
I mean, it definitely was not its normal way. And you know what? 6 or 8 weeks later, she was normal. She said it hurt when she was having sex.
Really?
Like tight hurt, you know?
Yeah.
So my point is like, you know, that's another thing. I don't think this, like, why would you really need rejuvenation? If you're 80 years old, maybe you shouldn't be having sex anymore.
Yeah.
You know?
But it's not the 80-year-olds that are doing that. That's a funny thing.
I mean, what
thing.
Are you doing? Having sex with, like, a freaking train or something? What is...
Yeah, or what guy, you know, what guy would say you need to do something about the way your vagina looks or feels?
I just,
you know?
I don't know. I think it's just sad. My point is that, like, women are having the wrong conversations. We're having the wrong focal point. I think that attraction is so much deeper than physicality. And I think... if you're playing the I need to be the hottest game, mm-hmm. you're never going to win. You're always going to be in competition. And ultimately, like, men are attracted to, like, it's not just physical. I mean, they're attracted. Physical is not going to keep a man.
Right.
It's not. I mean, men like a chase. They like brains. They like a personality. They like an essence of a woman. They like this. They like the essence of, you know, that chemistry.
Mm-hmm.
And that comes from a lot of different things.
Mm.
You know, I know some guys, one guy that I was dating for a while in particular, he told me how he's an entertainer or whatever. So, whatever it is, even though he's not a big name, it's kind of like if you're constantly entertaining or whatever, you're doing your shows.
Mm-hmm.
There's always women afterwards that want to whatever, talk to you or whatever.
Right.
And he just would say that the past relationships and stuff that he's had, it's kind of like everything seems like a lot of women have watched way too much porn and they're trying to put on this idea of sexy as opposed to just being who they are.
Yeah.
Or if they're
trying to be what they think men want
them
to be.
Yeah, and he's like, it's not sexy to me. And he said also like boob jobs, not that all boob jobs, but he's just like, it kind of becomes not about them. It's like an attachment of them. And then they want to walk around topless at home and they want everybody to touch and feel it. And he's like, it's not sexy anymore. You know,
it's not. I don't find fake boobs sexy at all. They really don't do anything for me. They don't look real, you know?
I mean, there might be some that look good, but
maybe
I think
some,
it's the mentality that goes along with it. It's now not like one thing he'd say, you know, if you're with somebody who it's them, they're kind of a little bit more, they conceal themselves a little bit more. It's a little, not necessarily they don't wear cleavage, but that there's a little bit more guardedness in that area. And then when you do get, you know, down and dirty or whatever, naked or whatever, it's kind of like you're getting to see them and it's more intimate as opposed to look what I just got done, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, I just think that it's just all kind of screwed up.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I don't know. The fake boobs do nothing for me. Absolutely nothing. You know, it turns me off. But what are you going to do? So do you have any weekend plans? You know, today is Yom Kippur. It starts tonight.
Is this the fasting one?
Yeah, the Day of Atonement.
Oh, okay.
And that's like the holiest day of the year.
Are you gonna do it?
You know, I used to until I met my wife, and then she didn't. So I
really?
I pretty much found an easy way out.
That's
so cool. I don't fast anymore.
Oh, wow.
But we're still going to have a feast. Tonight.
So you guys
are
going to act like you fasted, and then you're like, hey, we're starving. Where's the food? Show up.
But you know how hard it is to do? I mean, you know, and it's not even the food. You get thirsty, though. You really
get
thirsty.
Drink water.
You can't drink water. You can't do shit, man.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a very holy day.
Yeah.
Because it's supposed to be the day where God finally decides whether you're going to live the following year or not.
Mm.
You know, you're written into the book of life.
Mm.
So people try to be good, they forgive, they ask to be forgiven,
mm-hmm.
that kind of thing, you know. So it's like the confessions that you guys have, you know, but this is like once a year type
mm-hmm.
of a confession.
Do you not believe it?
What?
Do you believe in it?
In what? In confessions?
No, I mean, you're not fasting or adhering to it. So
yeah, but I try to respect it, you know? I mean,
oh, no, but I'm asking if you believe it. Do you believe, like, next year this is going to determine whether you live or not?
No, I mean, come on. No, I don't believe that.
Oh. Okay.
Yeah, because, I mean, you know, I haven't observed it really, and nothing happened to me. I'm still alive. So, you know. So I don't think it's about the observance. It's about more of, like, I don't know.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Respect.
You know, religion is religion. You know, makes sense to some people, not
yeah.
to others, you know.
Yeah, it seems religious.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's very religious. And in Israel, it's cool because nobody drives on Yom Kippur, so people walk on the street. Kids ride their bikes in the middle of the street. And it's pretty cool. Everybody comes out and gathers at the temple and things like that.
Oh, yeah?
So, yeah, so it's pretty cool. I mean, people make the best of it.
That's cool.
And what's interesting is back in 1973, the Arabs took advantage of the fact that nobody was working, people were fasting, distracted, and attacked and started the Yom Kippur War in 1973. And we were almost annihilated, believe it or not.
Did you guys retaliate?
Because nobody was nobody was prepared. Of course. I mean, you know, we ended up winning that war, but it was pretty close. That was a very close one. They really invaded. So that was, yeah, that was not a pleasant thing. But what they miscalculated is the fact that everybody was home, so it was easy to draft everybody quickly, you know. And back in those times, there's no internet, there's no, you know, I mean, even phones were, like, not that advanced. So people would just drive to people's houses and tell them, put on your uniform. You know, you need to go to the front lines. So that sort of, like, helped organize it. And, you know, because people were available. You didn't have to go looking for them.
Wow.
Yeah. So that, yeah, that's Yom Kippur, you know.
So where are you going for the feast tonight?
To my sister-in-law's.
Are they fasting?
Yeah, yeah. But the sad thing is, you know, we still have to work, you know. I mean, people want to have their shows. I'm not going to tell them no, you know. I'm celebrating a holy day, you know. So, yeah, so I'll be working.
So, do they know you're not doing the fast?
Who?
Your sister-in-law.
Yeah.
Oh, okay, they're not going to do
it.
Yeah,
they don't do it either.
That's funny. Oh. Oh, no, I thought that you said that they did do it.
No, not
they don't. Okay, so you guys are just going to have the fast. That's cool.
Yeah. What the hell? Feel like it's a holiday, you know. But I'll bet you notice if you drive around tonight or tomorrow, there's probably not going to be a lot of cars around.
This is such a heavy Jewish city.
Yeah.
You don't realize it till certain Jewish holidays happen, and you're like, oh, wow.
Especially in the valley here.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
All concentrated here.
Mm.
But yeah. Anyway, you have any big plans for the weekend? You just...
My roommate's parents are going to be in town, and it's going to be fun to meet them, and we're going to actually go out to dinner. What else is going on? I have a couple little things lined up as far as I'm going to be babysitting some kids.
Oh, cool.
That's exciting.
Do you like it?
You know, I'm not interested, but... Not interested. I'm good with kids.
Yeah.
We play Hucklebuckle Beanstalk. I make up games for them.
Really?
Do hot or cold, give them high fives, and then they say high or low. I say, give me five up high, down low, and then they try to hit your hand, and you move your hand really quick, and you say too slow. You know, do that game.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Basically, I just torment them.
Yeah.
Because I'm like a big kid myself.
Yeah, that you are. All right, Kira, have a great weekend.
Have a good Yom Kippur.
I will. And everybody, for the Jewish friends, have a Yom Kippur, a good Yom Kippur. I hope you get written in the Book of Life. And we'll see you all here on Monday.
You have been listening to Sam and Kara in the Morning, which airs every weekday from 10 to 11 a.m. Pacific Standard Time and originates from the Los Angeles Talk Radio studios. For questions regarding the show or to learn more about sponsorship opportunities, please direct all correspondents to info@latalkradio.com. Sam and Kara in the Morning is a production of LA Talk Radio. We say what we want.